start at the beginning of the Sedra. Torah says, Emor ala kohanim b'nei Aaron v'yomarto aleihem. So Chazal, Armadayik, Emor v'yomarto, why the double lashon? Lahazir gdolim alaktanim. That here is one specific place where the adults are responsible to make sure that the children who are under bar mitzvah also don't become tameh. Kohen is not allowed to be metameh himself, and he has to make sure that his children who are kohanim, male children, also don't become tameh. There are two other places in the Torah where the Torah goes out of its way to say that gedolim are muzer al ktanim. The other, one other place is by shrotzim, by eating different kinds of creatures that are usher to eat, that you're not allowed to feed them to cotton either. There's a machlokus whether if a cotton is eating them on his own, whether you have to separate him or not. A parent has to separate him because of chinuch. Chinuch could be only midrabanan. Someone else, if they have to separate him from it or not, is a machlokus. Whether cotton ochel nevelos, right, based in muzorim lahafrishon. If a cotton is eating treifa things or doing something osur, whether anybody except his parents or his father has to separate him. That's a separate child. But to feed him things that are osur is osur, and really it applies to everything. Except the Torah said it in these three places, specifically, halachically, for various reasons. I'm going to tell you a hashkothic idea. So far we got two places. What's the third place? Shabbos. That the Torah says, Lo sase kol malacha, ata, uvincha, uvitecha. Now, if the bincha and bitecha are over bar and bas mitzvah, then they're ata. Right? Then they have the Torah talking to them specifically. Doesn't have to talk to them through their father because they're an ata to themselves, because the father had a father and mother too. So every person over bar and bas mitzvah is ata. So when it says ata uvincha uvitecha, it means your children who are not bar mitzvah. And there you can't cause them to be mechal Shabbos or let them be mechal Shabbos for your sake. So three places the Torah specifically spoke about not letting children or causing children to do something that's osur. By shrotzim, by Shabbos, and by tuma, by a kohen. So aside from the halachic reasons why the Torah mentioned those three things, because really it applies to everything, the halacha is you're not allowed to cause a child to do any aveira per se, feed him something that's osur, or make him do something that's osur. But why did the Torah then mention it in these three places specifically? I was thinking, because these three places represent why chinuch is so important. Could be, there's another shaila, when a cotton does something wrong, cotton does an aveira, okay? So what's happening here? Is there an aveira? Except, since he's a cotton, the Torah had rachmanis on him and doesn't punish him. Because you're not yet totally in control, and you're not yet totally aware maturely of what you're doing. So the Torah, the Rabbanu Shalom, did not punish him. There's no punishments. Not bidei Adam and not bidei Shamayim. But there's an aveira. Or no, a maisa cotton is nothing. It's not even an aveira. It's nothing. It's like he didn't do anything wrong. What's the one of the nafkaminas? Whether he has to do tshuva when he gets older. If he did an aveira, it's just he's not going to get punished. So the aveira is there. He has to wipe it away and somehow get away the effect. But if there's no aveira at all, there's nothing to do tshuva on. So that is, even if the maisa of a cotton is nothing. Okay, he didn't do a maisa aveira. He can't say he sinned. But there's three reasons why it's important to be mechanech that child for the future. Even if the maisa aveira is an aveira, so of course you don't want the kid to do something wrong, even though he's not going to get punished for it, but he did something wrong. But if there's nothing wrong with it, because he's a cotton, his maisa is not considered a maisa avera, then why the inyan of chinuch not to cause him to do it? So I think these three averas represent, or these three mitzvahs or whatever, represent the reasons for chinuch. Firstly, the idea of shrotzim. It may be that the action of a katan is not what's it called, not a maisa avera, but the effects the avera have are still there. Remember, back towards the beginning of the year, we spoke about the two aspects of mitzvahs and averas. There was the melech mitzaves ha'am, the king commanding his subjects. It's one aspect of a mitzvah and avera, and the doctor advising the patient. That's the more intrinsic effect of the mitzvah and the avera. Every mitzvah is a vitamin. Every avera is a poison. It has a intrinsic effect. Could be that the mice of a cotton has no significance between him and the king. It's not considered like he's rebelling against the king, because you know what it means to rebel. He doesn't know who the king is. So his mice is not considered a mice avera. But the effect the avera has an effect on him. And therefore, what's it called? The Torah told us, don't let your children eat shrotzim. It's true. The maisa of eating may not be a rebellion against God, but the maisa, the shrotzim, are in his system. He's been affected. Even if you eat poison and you do it unintentionally, it's going to have an effect on you. Right? Poison, even if you do it accidentally, it's going to have an effect. By an avera, it could be if you do it accidentally, not, because the avera affects your neshama. And if your body is totally, there's no intention at all, it's not just you made a mistake, but you did it totally by accident, then your neshama doesn't go into gear by an action that was done by accident. But if you did it unintentionally, you made a mistake, I thought it was Sunday and it was really Shabbos. So I didn't really mean to rebel against God. I thought I was doing something on Sunday. But the effect is there. So you need to have tshuva and kapara to take away the effect. So even if the action of a child is more like an unintentional action, so you can't say that he's rebelled against God, but he has the shrotzim inside of him, and it's affected his neshama. Right? Shrotzim ramatamtim is halev, they have an effect on the person. That's why it says that even a child, a baby, you shouldn't let nurse from a non-Jew. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu didn't nurse from a non-Jew, because it has an effect. Can't say the mice of a child is something that's osur. He doesn't know what he's doing. Right? But the lemaisa, the effect is there. So that's one reason that chinuch is very important, because you don't want the negative things to have an effect on the neshama of that child, even if the actions of the child aren't significant. Second reason. You want to engender in a child proper beliefs. And that's what chinuch is also. Chinuch is hashkafas. Right? You want the child to believe in what's proper. And even if his actions are not necessarily significant, but you want him to grow up with the right attitudes, with the right beliefs. That's Shabbos. Shabbos is there to remind us that the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. It's the foundation of emunah, the foundation of hashkafa. So even if the actions of a katan are insignificant, but you want to be mechanechim in order, or her, in order to, what's it called, to engender within the child a proper outlook, proper attitudes, proper beliefs. The last thing is tumah. Again, it may be that the actions of the katan are insignificant, but you don't want to put him in an environment that's a negative environment. By making him tame, so you are surrounding him with tumah, you are putting him in an environment that has an effect. The environment has a tremendous effect on people. Kashpa sasviva. And by entering a child into a tame environment, that in itself is a bad thing. Even if the action of the child of being metame himself is not something significant, but the tumah itself, being in the environment of a tumah, is damaging. So for those three reasons, we want to keep children doing what's right and not doing what's wrong, even if the actions of right and wrong are not so significant for that child, but the impact it has, whether on his beliefs, attitudes, outlooks, and so on, or on his environment, or on the physical effect or spiritual effect of what's affecting his neshama, what he's ingesting, what kind of things he's doing that have an effect on his neshama, even if the action itself isn't a rebellion against the king. Okay. Any questions on that? We'll go to something else. Okay. In this week's Sedra, let's do this first, and this time we have a few other things to do, but this is more important since it has to do with Sfiras HaOmer. The mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is in this week's Sedra, and therefore it would be foolish not to speak about it, since we kill two birds with one stone, speak about current events, and also speak about the parsha. So there are many different aspects to Sfiras HaOmer. I want to mention one to you, and again, this may take us the rest of the time, but it's worth it. Sfiras HaOmer has many, many ta'amei ha-mitzvah, many ideas behind it. The most basic idea is that they knew that when they left Mitzrayim, they're going to eventually receive the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was told, "V'zelech ha'os." You will serve God on this mountain, on Har Sinai, meaning that you will get the Torah. And there's an extra nun in Tavdun to hint that after 50 days you're going to get the Torah. So there's a Masorah, Midrashim, that say they knew that in 50 days they were going to get the Torah. And they began anxiously to count towards that goal. And the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is every year when we re-celebrate Shavuos, our Yomim Tovim are not just commemorations, but they're reliving that experience. It's every year we come back to that time zone, right? That the station in time where we actually relive the occurrence. So every year we have a reacceptance of the Torah. And therefore, we have a reliving of the preparation of counting the days towards Torah. So it's a preparation for Torah. We're preparing for Kabbalah Satorah. Now, if you are going to have orientation for a course, you want to prepare for the course, that's called orientation. So you usually get a copy of the textbook or a synopsis of the textbook, and you leaf through it, and you get a good idea of what this course contains. That's preparing for the course. But if you have no idea what the course is about, and you have no idea what the text is, how in the world do you prepare for it? What are you preparing? They didn't know what the Torah was. They didn't have the Torah. Right? What exactly were they preparing for 49 days if they didn't know what the Torah was? And don't tell me they didn't know, because I'm telling you they didn't. How do I know? Because the Chazal makes such a big deal about Nasa v'Nishma. They accepted the Torah blindly. Now, if they knew what it was, what's the big deal? They knew what it was. Elamai, they didn't know what it was. So if they didn't know what it was, right? And even though it says Avram kept the Torah and Yitzchak kept the Torah, those were only Yechidei Skula. The Hamonam didn't know what the Torah was. They had seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach and the extra mitzvahs that were given to Avram Avinu. And beyond that, they didn't know what was in the Torah. So what were they preparing exactly? Second question. Happens to coincide a period of mourning with the preparation for the Torah. Seemingly it could be coincidental, but nothing is coincidental, obviously. Right? So during the time that they were preparing for the Kabbalah Satorah, in the time of Rabbi Akiva, okay, thousands of years after Matan Torah, and in one generation, one specific year, Talmid Rabbi Akiva died. Terrible tragedy. So during Sfiras HaOmer, for a portion of it, we have 33 days of mourning. Okay, just seems to be coincidental that those two things happen to come together. And if Talmid Rabbi Akiva had died Hanukkah time, so we'd have mourning for them Hanukkah time. why do we mourn for the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva when there were other occurrences in history around that same time even that were just or worse, just as bad or worse, and we don't commemorate them at all? Two examples I can give you. In the time of Yanai HaMelech killed out the entire Sanhedrin, except for his brother-in-law, Shimon ben Shetach, and the other Gedolim who ran away to Egypt. Right? We don't have a commemoration for the terrible tragedy of the Sanhedrin being wiped out. They didn't die, they were killed, or murdered. Hordas HaMelech, Herod, killed out the entire Talmidei Chacham of his generation, except for Bava ben Buta, who he blinded. We don't have a commemoration for that either. But Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, they weren't the Sanhedrin, they were just Talmidim. Okay, there's a lot of Talmidim, and they died. Tragedy. But we don't mourn other tragedies, why do we mourn this one? For 33 days. In order to answer those two questions, I want to start with a lengthy preface and take my word that eventually we will get back to these two questions. The Torah says, or the Gemara says, that if somebody says to you, Chochma Bagoyim, if someone tells you the nations of the world possess Chochma, Ta'amin, believe them. Goyim have wisdom. Torah Bagoyim, Al Ta'amin. But if somebody tells you Torah exists by the nations of the world, don't believe them. Now, if that means that it's impossible for a goy to learn Torah, either because it's aser for him, so if somebody tells you goyim do something that's aser, don't believe them. That's completely absurd. Goyim do a lot of things that are aser. Right? And there are plenty of goyim who learn Torah. Officially. There are many priests who part of their initiation into the priesthood is to learn Mishnah, Gemara, to at least have some kind of course to know what it's about. There's even a priest who wrote a commentary on the Mishnah, Danby, and it's not a bad commentary either. So, if you're telling me that don't believe that Goyim learned Torah because they're not allowed, that's absurd. Elamai, don't believe Goyim can learn Torah because they're not capable of learning Torah. A Goy will never understand Torah. That's absurd too. I find it very difficult to believe that a nuclear physicist who opens an art scroll Chumash can't make heads and tails of it. I'm sure he could. Okay. So what does it mean? Torah by Goyim al tamin, categorically, don't believe that Goyim have Torah. Chochma yes, Torah not. I think what it means is the following. The story goes that Bertram Russell was a professor of ethics in City College in the 1940s. And he was a self-proclaimed philosopher and he was a professor of ethics. During that time in his life, he led a very immoral life, according to the standards of the time even. He was an avowed communist. He was, believed in free love, didn't believe in marriage. He was a pretty immoral, unethical person, according to the society he lived in. So the ethics committee of the college called him in, and they said, Professor Russell, we have a problem with you. You teach ethics in our institution, and you're not ethical. He said, what's the problem? He said, 20 years ago, I was a professor of mathematics in a school in England. And I taught geometry. And no ethics committee ever called me in and said, Professor Russell, we have a problem with you. You teach geometry in our institution, and you're not a square, a circle, or a parallelogram. I don't have to be what I teach. I just have to teach it. I don't have to be a plane to teach geometry, and I don't have to be ethical to teach ethics. That's chochma. Chochma is something that you possess. You can do what you want with it. It doesn't necessarily have to affect your being, your person, your personality, your morality. You are you, and your chachma is your chachma. It's just something you possess. And his chachma remains. There are many authors, people of literary talent, chachma, throughout history, whether they were French literature or English literature, or makes no difference, even an American. I can think of one American author who will remain nameless, who wrote books that were classics not too long ago. And if you stumbled over him when he was in a drunken stupor, you wouldn't know the difference between him and the beach bum next to him. But he had literary talent. And his character did not detract one bit from his literary talent, and his literary talent didn't add one bit to his character. He was a bum, and he was a fine author. You can be the President of the United States, theoretically, and be a totally immoral person. There have been people like that too. And the immorality of your character didn't detract from your ability to be a fine politician, and your being a fine politician didn't add one bit to your character. So chachma, and that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody who is a secular chacham is immoral, unethical, or whatever. Chas v'shalom. There are many goyim, right, who their wisdom does impact on them. And they have refined themselves. That's fine. But it's not necessary. It doesn't have to be. Your chachma and your person are two entities which don't necessarily have to impact on each other. That's chachma. And therefore, when you see a chacham, michachmei umos ha'olam, you have to make a brach on them. You saw Einstein. Einstein is Jewish, but it doesn't make a difference. His wisdom was secular. You saw Plato, Aristotle. You have to make a brach on them. Asher nosan mechachmoso lebosor v'dom. Baruch ato Hashem Elokeinu melech ha'olam. Asher nosan mechachmoso lebosor v'dom. You make a bracha that the Rabbanu Shem gave from his wisdom to human beings, to flesh and blood. The person remains flesh and blood. God gives the wisdom, no strings attached. You do what you want with it. There's no conditions. And you can be called a wise person, even if your person is rotten to the core. Torah is not like that. Torah, as its name implies, is horah. It guides. It shows. It enlightens. It shows you the way. You can't have Torah unless it impacts on your personality. If it doesn't change you and make you something else, Torah is not information. I saw this somewhere once. Torah is transformation. It transforms you, has to transform you into something else. It can't just be a bunch of facts. And therefore, the bracha we make on a Talmud Chacham is a different bracha. A bracha in Chachmei HaTorah is Asher Cholak Mechachmoso Lireyov, that God apportioned out his wisdom to those that fear him. You have to be a Yirei Shamayim to have Torah. And God doesn't give it away with no strings attached, but he... He doesn't give it with no strings attached, but he apportions it out and he remains attached to it. So you don't just have the Torah and do whatever you want with it. In order for Torah to be considered Torah, it has to impact on your personality, your morality, who you are. It has to make an impression. And that's really what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Divrei Torah nimshalu ke'esh. Torah is compared to fire. Ma'esh osaroshem, aftorah osaroshem. Just like fire makes an impression, Torah has to make an impression. If it doesn't make an impression, then it's not Torah. Either are people who learn Torah and it doesn't seem to make any impression on them, and they know plenty of Torah. I'll give you an example of such a person without naming him, and you probably never heard of him anyway, but... There was a person who lived about 100 years ago in Europe, in Lithuania. And he was in one of the major yeshivas of the time. And he was known to be a genius in Torah. That yeshiva, which we won't name either, there were four shiurim. The highest shiur was the fourth shiur. He was in the fifth shiur, together with the Rosh Yeshiva's son. Shiur to themselves. You can imagine the level of Torah learning of this person. And everybody thought that one day he would be one of the Gedolei Yisrael. And until one day they found him writing his Chidushei Torah, smoking a cigar, and happened to be Shabbos. So they asked him to leave the yeshiva, right? Obviously the Torah had no effect on him, right? The only thing the Torah was like fire was to light a cigar. But and he eventually emigrated to America and became one of the heads of the conservative movement, the founders of the conservative movement in America. Now this person knew a lot of Torah, but it made no impression on him. So what was with his Torah? So the way I like to understand it is the following. In the men's side of a wedding, they have a liquid that guys pour on their hat and light it and dance for the chosen and kala with their hats burning, and they do not become Buddhist monks who do not ever attend another wedding and don't leave that wedding because they immolated themselves or their hats. It's a liquid that produces a cold flame, looks like fire, smells like fire, sounds like fire, but it's what they call stage fire. In the movies, they have that which looks, tastes, smells, sounds like fire, but it's fake. It's stage fire. It's fake fire. How do I know it's fake? It doesn't burn anything. It's not real. Even though it gives the appearance of fire. That's the kind of Torah of somebody who the Torah makes no impression on. It looks like Torah, smells like Torah, sounds like Torah, but it's not Torah. It's Chochmah. It remains Chochmah. In order to be transformed into Torah, it has to make an impression on the person. If it doesn't, then it is not Torah. It's Chochmah. Remains Chochmah. That's what Torah is. And if that's the case, then how do you make... Okay, let's get to what's it called. How can you ensure that the Torah will make an impression on you? So on that, it says in Pirkei Avos, or the Chazal said, Haderech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. The way to prepare yourself for the Torah to be able to make an impression on you is first to be Kona Derech Eretz, Midos Tovos. If you have Midos Tovos, if you have Derech Eretz, then the Torah will be able to make an impression. But if you do not have Midos Tovos, then the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Im Ein Derech Eretz, Ein Torah. Without Derech Eretz, there can't be Torah. You can learn Torah without Derech Eretz, but it won't be Torah. It'll be Chochmah. It'll be wisdom, but it won't be Torah. It'll remain wisdom, because it won't make any impression on you. If you are not the kind of person who has Derech Eretz, the Torah is not going to make an impression on you. If you have Derech Eretz, the basics, and then you learn Torah, then the Torah will give you even a higher level of Derech Eretz, as it says, Im Ein Torah, Ein Derech Eretz. Without Torah, you can't reach the higher levels of Derech Eretz. But without the simple, basic levels of Derech Eretz, you'll never have Torah. And Rabbeinu Yonah says it categorically. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Lo yishkon ha-Torah la'olam. The Torah will never reside b'mi she'ein bo derech eretz, mi she'ein bo midos tovos. Someone who doesn't have good midos, the Torah will not reside by him, ever. We see the Torah does reside by people who don't have midos tovos. So, one answer was what we said. It's not Torah. It remains Chochmah. It doesn't become Torah because it doesn't impact on the person, because without midos tovos, the Torah can't impact on you. But I have another
way of understanding what the Rabbeinu Yonah said, based on the following. I don't remember if we spoke about this sometime in the year. Maybe yes, maybe not. It's good to hear it again. Rav Simcha Zissel from Kelim, the Alter from Kelim, made the following observation. He said that Charles Darwin promulgated the theory of evolution that man evolved from the ape because he never saw a real human being. So he assumed that the glorified apes around him came from other apes. Had he ever seen a real human being like my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he never would have made such a theory. It's impossible to believe that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter came from an ape. Now, it's cute what he said, but it seems to give the impression that Charles Darwin was some kind of bum, you know, who swung from the trees eating bananas and guzzling beer and with a turkey leg in one hand or whatever, right? And that his friends were all like that. And therefore, he never saw a real human being. He saw a bunch of basically apes, right? Human apes. Well, that's not true. Charles Darwin was a very refined, respectable person. His circle of friends were very refined and enlightened people. They were not bums. So how could Reb Simcha Zissel say that Charles Darwin never saw a real human being, and that's why he thought that people came from apes? Let me tell you what I think Reb Simcha Zissel meant, based on the following. There's a story that's told about three separate gedolim in history, and the same exact story, which has me believe that it never happened to anybody. It's just a story. It's said about the Maral, it's said about Rabbi Yonasan Apshitz, and about the Rambam. I saw it about the Rambam, so I'll tell you about the Rambam. It's not a chazal, it's a story. So it doesn't make a difference if it happened or it didn't happen. It's a marshal. What the story goes like this. The Rambam had an argument with a philosopher. The argument centered around, can you change the instincts of an animal? Or are animals born with instincts and you can't change them? The Rambam said the second way, you can't change the instincts of an animal. And the philosopher said, you can. So the philosopher said, I'll prove to you that I can. Give me 10 cats, I will train them to go against their instincts. So a few months later, the philosopher calls the Rambam. He said, I want to invite you to a banquet where I will show you that I've been successful in training these cats to go against their instincts. So the Rambam comes to the banquet with a little box. The philosopher comes with a little box. They sit down. The philosopher gets up at the beginning of the meal, opens his box, and takes out a bell. He rings the bell, and 10 cats come out of the kitchen on their hind legs, balanced perfectly, walking like a human being, dressed like waiters and waitresses, with a tray perfectly balanced with the entree on one hand and a towel draped around the other hand, and they come out, they serve the first course, and they curtsy and go back to the kitchen. The philosopher looks at the Rambam and he says, I've obviously proved my point that I've trained these cats to go against their instincts. The Rambam says, nice, but it's a long meal, let's see what happens. So they come, serve the main course, finally it's time for dessert. The philosopher gets up with his bell, rings the bell, and these Pavlovian cats, right, who have been trained to react to that ringing of the bell, come out and are ready to serve dessert. Meanwhile, the Rambam gets up, and he opens his little box and puts it on the floor. Within minutes, there's pandemonium in the hall. The trays are being thrown all over, the dish is broken, and the cats are down on all four legs chasing the mice that the Rambam let loose. The Rambam looks at the philosopher and he says, you can train a cat to think he's a waiter all you want, but let the first mouse go by and the cat remembers he's a cat and not a waiter. You can't change the instincts of an animal. You can train them temporarily. They can act whatever very nicely. But when the first mouse goes by, they remember they're a cat. They remember they're an animal. A human being, on the other hand, is different. We also were born with instincts, but we also were given free choice. And we have the ability to control those instincts and even to change them. And some say that's what it means, Umosar ha'adam min ha'behema ayin. The benefit, the difference between a human being and an animal is ayin. Human beings can say no. Animals can't say no. An animal is programmed. The Maral says animal, behema, is bo ma. Whatever it is, it is. Shor ben yomo nikra shor. A shor is born a shor, it dies a shor, it never changes. It's a programmed being. Human beings are Adam. Adam in gematria is ma. You always have to ask what, where. Where is he holding? Because he's always changing. Human beings can change their instincts. Animals can't. Human beings can say no. An animal can't say no. An animal sees something that is delicious, it eats it. It doesn't start thinking, do I want to be fleshik? Is it okay to eat? Is the right time to eat? Is the right place to eat? Just eats, finished. That's it. Doesn't make any cheshbonos. Maybe I shouldn't eat this and fill myself up because something better coming later. Human beings make all those cheshbonos. And they can not eat, even though their instinct says eat. They can hold themselves back. Somebody who can't, basically is acting like an animal. And human beings can be glorified animals if you never worked on your midos that you're not in control. A person can be like a trained cat, and he can be very refined. But if he never worked on his midos where he's in total control, and there's no mouse in the world that could bring him down on all fours, then he's basically a glorified animal. He's not different in kind from the animal. He's just different in degree. That's all. Rav Nyman in his Sefer Darchei Musar says that that is what happened to Ephron Achiti. Ephron was a very magnanimous, he wanted to give Avram Avinu Maris HaMachpelah for free. And in the end, he overcharged him and cheated him. What changed? What happened? He said he really meant it. He wanted to give it to him for free. But Ephron had a mouse, his mouse was in the shape of a shekel. He couldn't control himself. As soon as money was mentioned, he went down on all fours. He lost control. So he wanted, but Avraham mentioned money. That's it. He's finished. Never worked on himself to control himself or whatever, to be in control. So unless a person works on his midos and is in total control and there's nothing that can ever bring him on all fours, then he's basically the same type as an animal and he's not really exercising his identity as a human being. That's what Rav Simcha Zissel said. Charles Darwin never saw a real human being. He saw very refined people. But they weren't different than trained cats. They conditioned themselves to act nice, but they weren't in control. Because let the first mouse go by, and for this one the mouse could be food, and for this one other things, money, whatever it may be. Then they lose control. So that's just like an animal. So he assumed that these glorified animals came from less glorified animals. They're the same kind. But had he ever seen my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was in total control, he'd realize that animals and human beings are not the same kind, just differing in degree. They're different kinds. This is a being that has control, that has free choice, and this is a being that has no free choice. This one couldn't have come from this one. It's not just a matter of degree, it's a matter of kind. And two different kinds can't come from each other. You can change things in degree from one to the other, but not in kind. That's what I think Reb Simcha Zissel meant. And that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. Lo yishkon ha-Torah la-olam b'misha ein bo midos tovos. We translated it, the Torah will never exist by someone who doesn't have midos tovos. Maybe you can read it differently. Lo yishkon ha-Torah la-olam. The Torah will not exist forever in somebody who doesn't have midos tovos. It can exist temporarily. Till when? Till the first mouse goes by. As soon as the first mouse goes by, that's the end of the Torah. So unless you prepare yourself to be the kind of person that the Torah can make an impression on, then you'll never have Torah completely, not on a permanent basis, only on a temporary basis. And therefore, derech eretz kodma l'Torah. Midos, working on your midos, and being in control is the preface to Torah. Therefore, we're not working on the chochmas haTorah. Because Chochmas HaTorah is irrelevant to a certain degree if it doesn't make an impression on you. Then it remains Chochmah. We're not Mekabel the Chochmah, we're Mekabel the Torah. So we don't need to work on the facts of Torah, so we don't know them, it doesn't make a difference. What they worked on was their midos. Every day, a different midah. That's what Sfira Sa'omer is. Sfira means sphere, sapphire, sapphire, means to be mezachech, to distill something, to make it pure and clear. We're working on clarifying our midos. So when the Torah is given, we are not asbestos that the fire of Torah can't have any impression on. We're impervious to Torah. We are flammable and not inflammable. We're not able to, the fire of Torah, to have it make an effect on us. So we're preparing not our minds for Torah. We're preparing our beings to be the kind of people that the Torah can have an impression on. Otherwise, it can't be a Torah. And in fact, I think that's why the Goyim were rejected. Right? Famous Gemara that the Rav Hashem offered the Torah to Esav. They asked, what's in it? The Rav Hashem said, you can't murder. He said, we have a problem. Because we have a bracha from Yitzchak Avinu, al char b'chotichya. We live by the sword. How can we have a Torah that says you can't murder? So God left them, went to Yishmael. They also asked, what's in it? The Rav Hashem said, you can't steal. He said, we have a problem. We have a bracha from a malach. Yodo bakol v'yad kol bo. Our hands in everybody's pocket, their hands in our pocket. How could the Torah says you can't steal? Left them. It always bothered me. They didn't say no. They said they had a problem. Why didn't God say there's no problem? Murder and living by your sword are not, what's it called, contradictory. Why? Because living by your sword means you're going to be soldiers, mercenaries, hired by people to fight their battles. That's wartime. That's not murder. Yishmael doesn't mean that you have a license to pickpocket people. What it means is you're going to be nomads and you're going to need the whole world for your basic needs. But one day will come when the whole world will need you. And today we understand that's for oil. So why didn't the Rebbe Shem explain to them why there's no problem instead of just leaving them? And then see if they want the Torah. One answer I was thinking is that if you don't have midos, if you're a nation that thinks you have a license to murder, then you have absolutely no midos. So how can you get the Torah? There's nothing to talk about. If you're a nation that thinks you have a license to steal, then you obviously don't have the basic midos tovos of a human being. There's nothing to talk about. And in fact, why were we chosen to get the Torah? Not because we were the smartest, right, most frum, most pious people in the world. No. The Torah says why we were chosen, why Avraham was chosen, that his children to get the Torah. Ki yedati v'lemana sheyitzave esbona v'yesbeso achrov lishmor derech Hashem. Says the Rambam, derech Hashem is midos tovos, derech eretz. Because the Rabban Shem knew that Avraham Avinu would teach his children midos tovos and derech eretz, and they would be capable of getting the Torah. Because without that, you would be capable of getting chachma, but no Torah. Therefore, that's one of the reasons why there's Torah Shebal Peh. And all the Torah was not written down in book form. There are many reasons. One of the reasons is that if the Torah would all be written down, you could curl up with a volume of Torah and learn it and think that you have Torah just because you have a bunch of information. And therefore, the Rabban Shem didn't want that to happen because that's not Torah. Torah has to make an impression on you. You can't just integrate the knowledge. Therefore, you have to learn Torah from a living person who represents the Torah. And that's exactly what a Talmud Chacham is. The Gemara says, Akama tipshoi sharinshi, people are very foolish. Dekami mikme sefer Torah, velokami mikme gavra rabba. They stand up for a sefer Torah, they don't stand up for a Talmud Chacham. The sefer Torah is written on dead parchment, dead ink, locked up in an Aron Kodesh the whole week, doesn't do anything for anybody. The purpose of that Torah is that people should learn it and become living sefer Torah. So they stand up for the dead sefer Torah, they don't stand up for living sefer Torah. It's foolishness. But that's what a person who learns Torah has to become, a living sefer Torah. And therefore you have to learn Torah from a living person. And in Dom Maharav, Lamalach Hashem Tzvako, Shivakish Torah Mipiyu. Only someone who represents Torah can you learn Torah from. And somebody who doesn't represent Torah, you can't. Which necessitates me to put in a footnote. So then what am I doing here? Okay. How can you learn Torah from me? I don't consider myself a Malach Hashem Tzvakos. So I always like to say the following. If it said, Im do mehoish lemalach Hashem Tzvakos, yaseihu rav, there wouldn't be too many rabbonim, teachers around. Very few. But it doesn't say that. It says, Harav l'malach. It may be that a person can't be a malach 24 hours a day. He'd like to be. He's working on it. But he hasn't reached that. But at least when he's teaching, at least when he's the Rav, he should try to act like a malach. If he can do that, not as a hypocrite, not as putting on a show, but because the rest of the time he'd like to do that, and he's working on it. But he can control himself to be like a malach when he's teaching, then that's fine. That many people can do. But not too many people can be a malach Hashem Tzvakos all the time. In any case, and parents should learn that. Parents can't be perfect, but they shouldn't act imperfectly in front of their children. In front of their children, right, they should be a good example. They want to fight, they want to do things, don't do it in front of your children. That's all. There are exceptions to that also, that children should see their parents are human beings also, and not perfect. They should realize that human beings make mistakes, even parents can make mistakes. But for the most part, a parent should try to be a good example in front of his child and save the times that he's not a good example, not for in front of the child. Okay, in any case. So that is the reason for Torah Shabbat Peh, and that's what we're preparing on Sfiras HaOmer. We're preparing ourselves to be the kind of people that fire, the fire of Torah can make an impression on. And that's what Rabbi Akiva taught his Talmidim. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Why do you love another person, mamash like yourself? Because you see in them that every Jew is a potential Sefer Torah. And it doesn't make a difference if it's my Sefer Torah, your Sefer Torah. I love the Sefer Torah of you. But you're capable of. Every person has that potential. That's why it can be Kamocha. So we have now Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, who are supposed to be the transmitters of Torah Shebaal Peh to the next generation. The lesson of Torah Shebaal Peh is, Torah makes you a living Sefer Torah. Rabbi Akiva, the Rebbe, told them, kamocha, a person is a potential living Sefer Torah. And it's in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer, which tells me that we're preparing ourselves to become living Sifrei Torah. We're not preparing the knowledge of Torah. We don't know what it is yet. And altogether, what do Talmidei Rabbi Akiva do? Lo nohagu kavod zeh bazeh. They don't respect each other properly. Not that they disrespect. It doesn't say nohagu shelo bekavod. But lo nohagu kavod. They missing and lacking that respect. That's a respect of a Sefer Torah. They didn't see in themselves or in the others that they're living Sefer Torah. And therefore, they can't be the transmitters of Torah. Because if you don't understand that Torah impacts on the person, then you don't have Torah. So they had to die. They couldn't be the transmitters of Torah Shebaal Peh because they didn't represent this idea of recognizing that every human being or every Jew is a living Sefer Torah. And therefore they didn't give the proper kavod to each other. So they had to die. And what they couldn't teach in their lifetime, through mourning for them during the Omer, we strengthen our understanding of what we're preparing the Omer by mourning for them. So we're not mourning for the tragedy of their death. That we do on Tisha B'Av. All tragedies of Jewish history we mourn on Tisha B'Av. But this is an auxiliary. It's a strengthening of Sfiras HaOmer. What Talmidei Rabbi Akiva should have taught in their lifetime, by mourning for them and understanding why they died, we're strengthening our understanding of Sfiras HaOmer. The purpose of Sfiras HaOmer is to become a living Sefer Torah, so when the Torah is given, you can be the kind of person that the Torah impacts upon, and you have Torah. So it's not we're mourning the tragedy. Tragedies we mourn on Tisha B'Av. But this isn't incidental to Sfiras HaOmer. It's just not a coincidence. They died because it was Sfiras HaOmer. Because what they did was pogum. Because we're in the time now that you should have learned this lesson. You should have learned it from your Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. You're the transmitters of Torah Shebaal Peh. All those things point to one thing. Torah has to make you a living Sefer Torah. And if you don't understand that, and you don't honor all these other living Sifrei Torah, then you can't fulfill your purpose. You're taken out of the world. And by mourning for them, we strengthen our understanding of Sfiras HaOmer. That's how the two things go together. Okay, I'm sorry for taking your time, but you're free now.